All right, everybody. This episode of the Smoking Tire Podcast is brought to you by Off the Record. Look, it's been Memorial Day. Hopefully you didn't get pinched because it's one of the biggest speed-trappy, grimy, money-grubbingest holidays of the year where the cops are just out to earn that revenue and you don't want to be a victim here. Go to offtherecord.com/TST and fight that ticket, because here's the thing: you should never ever plead guilty to a moving violation ever, because it's way too easy to use something like Off the Record and not have to fall into that system whereby they extract money from you just for using the roads in a totally normal and reasonable fashion. If you go to offtherecord.com/TST or use code TST10 on the Off the Record app, we will help you out with a special TST price on all your services using Off the Record for the next few years, whether it's moving violations, simple ones, whether it's like, you know, the bigger ones like DUIs or misdemeanor speeding, stuff like that. They can help you out. Even if you've already been convicted or you've already pled guilty, they can help in some cases reverse those charges after the fact. They cover 97% of the populated United States. Not everywhere, but pretty much everywhere. And they offer an incredibly high success rate when they fight those tickets for you. And look, if you get those points off your record, you're going to save on insurance for like years and years and years. The court system and the insurance companies are working hand in hand here to extract money from you long after they deserve to. So go to offtherecord.com/TST or use code TST10 on the Off the Record app and always, always, always fight that ticket. And we're also brought to you by Dylan Optics Sunglasses, which it's now 2021. This is the 10th year we have been working with Dylan Optics Sunglasses. 10 years. I can't believe that we've been actually sponsored by somebody for a decade. And I've probably gone through 50 pairs of their sunglasses. They're very durable sunglasses. In fairness, I treat them like I'm sponsored. and it's like, oh, they're scratched, ring, new ones. But Dylan's got new frames every season. I mean, when they started, I think there was 5 or 6 frames. There's now like 20 plus frames, 25 frames, whether it's the metal aviator style, the more the wayfarer style, the wraparound style, style that works great under a helmet, style that works great with water sports, different colors, and the trademark matte finish double polarized lenses are available in a variety of colors as well: blue, gold, black, silver. It's really cool. You can design your own combinations, so your glasses are pretty unique to you. Even if you see someone else in Dylan's, they might have completely different lens combo, and it's a unique pair of glasses. So they're each one is made to order, which is very cool, right in Scottsdale, Arizona. And if you go to thesmokingtire.com, there's a tab that says partners there, and there's a banner for Dylan Optics. Use that banner to get there, and we will send you a free Smoking Tire t-shirt for supporting the people who support us. These glasses are not cheap, but quality items rarely are. They last a long time. The lenses are incredibly high quality. They really make easy work of driving very long distances in bright light, being out on boats, being out in the sun, working in the sun, all that kind of stuff. When your eyes are really tired at the end of the day, the Dylans, they really, really help ease that stress. And they look cool also. So go to that partners tab on our website and use that link. We'll send you a free t-shirt with every pair of Dylan Optics that you buy. And of course, my favorite ad ever in the history of advertising, Tradecraft Farms. It is so nice to be sponsored by a company that produces the highest quality THC and CBD products right here in Los Angeles. Go California. Go legal cannabis production. Go civilization. This is very good for everybody. If you're in LA or coming through here, make sure to stop into a Tradecraft Farms official dispensary. The newest one is in Port Hueneme, which is a lovely drive if you were to go up to Malibu and maybe go to Bill's, which is definitely not a Cars and Coffee on Sundays. Absolutely not. I would never promote such a thing. If you're going past there, just keep going a little further. Drive PCH. It's lovely. Also, if you can't make it out there, ask for Tradecraft Farms by name in your local dispensary, wherever cannabis and CBD products are sold legally in the civilized world. They've got these really cool joints that are wrapped in gold. They've got joints that are wrapped in rose petals. Ball out. Why not? Show off for your friends. Tradecraft Farms on Instagram, and of course, tradecraftfarms.com. The best THC and CBD products in the history of mankind. I love doing all of that.
All right.
Okay, on this episode of the show, me and Zach are in the studio recapping the past couple of weeks' car events. We were driving the Ferrari SF90 as well as the Acura NSX, two different supercars at different price points. They use very similar hybrid setups, so we have an interesting chat comparing those. We also drove the BMW M3 competition, so we go a little more in depth from our video into that. And what else did we do, Zach?
You
answer a lot of your questions, and I ride the Harley Davidson Pan America motorcycle. So we talk about the cool adaptive suspension and what a nice bit of hardware that is. It's a crew show on the Smoking Tire Podcast.
You gotta say,
Shazam! How's everybody doing out there? I hope you guys are doing well. Hope everybody's having a good midweek sesh. Whatever's happening out there. Zach and I drove some things on Monday. We were up in the canyons with that Brazil.
Oh, man.
Bro, I went to PT yesterday, and there was a Brazilian guy there. And he was like, bro, I heard you had the Brazilian color M3.
For real?
Yeah, and he was like, that's the fucking shit. He was really into it. And I was like, of course you're into it. Like, you are Brazilian.
I mean, they also sell a lot of red and blue Corvettes, different colors.
Yeah, no, if we went to Houston and you saw F-150 with an American flag livery, some people would be like, ye fucking ha.
Right.
Same kind of thing.
It's green, man. It's
very green. And here's the SF90 driving by. Some people in the comments, the SF90 video didn't like that you had the M3 as a foreground element. And I was like, that's cool. It's about it.
It's called hinting at our next video.
It's called promo.
It's foreshadowing.
It's promoing,
it's promotion.
The other video.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It was 100% intentional, so people go, when are you reviewing that? Like, that's coming out soon.
Yeah, the M3, it drives a lot better than it looks.
It does. It does. It's very agile. I mean, it's, you know, quick rack, but the steering is better than the non-MM cars, you know? And there's a huge difference, I think. People, if you look like an M340, it's fast and it handles pretty well, but the steering feel is not there. And this isn't super communicative, but at least it's like there's no slack in the wheel. It's very, the nose moves when you move the wheel really quickly, and it just feels like you can just steer the car. It's going where you want to go. And the resistance is right. It's not too heavy. It's not artificially heavy. And then it's not too light either.
Well, we had it on a setting.
Do we have it on sport?
There is a sport setting. So I don't know whether sport is artificially heavy or comfort is artificially light, or the truth is somewhere in the middle.
Well, they're all artificial to
a degree.
They're
all artificial, right.
I think the Camaro, for me, is the biggest offender in make it super heavy. Make it like you're trying to open, you know, a door in the Titanic while it's sinking. That's how difficult it needs to be, and like that's sporty.
It also has a very little wheel. Small wheel.
Oh, a small wheel?
Yeah, it's a small wheel.
Speed things up a little bit.
Yep, a little bit.
I mean, everyone now is using EPS, but it's clear that some, you know, tune it better than others.
Yeah.
So that's how we judge, that's how we judge the cars we judge. We go, well, this is not as good as the Porsche EPS or the
Mazda
one.
Theirs is still the best, I think.
I think so, yeah.
I think theirs is still the best. I mean, and across a variety of products, too. Mm-hmm. It's not just like Ferrari's is really good, too, but like, you know, it's a pretty focused product range. It's not like I've got a Ferrari SUV yet to judge. And McLaren still uses hydraulic.
Yeah.
They're very vocal about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't. If I was McLaren, I wouldn't change their steering either.
Is the Evora GT hydraulic as well? I think it is.
The Evora is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good too. But
yeah. But anyway, so what where are we going to go with this? M3? It's skip the seats. The $3,800 super buckets.
They're cool.
They are cool. They look cool.
They do look cool.
And if there's eventually a super, you know, whatever, they had the GTS last time, the wildly overpriced track day special one. If they do a GTS in the new one and you got those seats, that would make some sense. But as a sedan, because an M3 is like, it's a daily driver. It's not, nobody, don't buy an M3 as your special weekend car. That would be dumb.
Yes.
Don't do that. You buy an M3 as a daily driver. That's nice. And, well, that's, those are not the right seats.
These are the GTS seats.
Those are the GTS
seats. Right, so I just wanted to go show people,
okay, sorry.
For those listening, like, the GTS seats, these are OEM GTS seats picture, and it's a fixed back carbon bucket. I mean, it looks basically like an aftermarket, you know, Recaro or Sparco race seat. It's got holes for harnesses.
They're $15,000. You know, did you see that right there? The price on that is $16,000.
I mean, so that's what you're getting with the M3 comp seats. Are really cool looking. They hold you really well if you're driving aggressively.
These are not the M3 comp seats, though.
I know. I switched.
Oh, okay.
I started a new paragraph.
Oh, okay.
New paragraph.
Yeah,
I'm saying
you
are correct. Like, these GTS seats are super hardcore, as are the ones in the M3 comp.
The ones in the M3 comp are almost worse. They're not almost worse because they're adjustable, because you can you can move things around. But that the hump where in between your thighs is just not good.
I guess it helps hold you in place a little bit.
I mean, other than my right thigh and buttock smashing on it every time I get in the car, I can't figure out why my thighs need to be divided by something. Like, why? What about a seat? Like, it's almost like a submarine belt should go there, but there isn't one.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why your balls need to be divided, but it doesn't. It's not good. And also, a racing seat. Did we already talk about this? Why do I feel like I've already talked about this?
Well, we reviewed the car a few days ago. We might have talked about it there.
I think maybe I'm having deja vu from the video that we just shot, but and so maybe this is going to seem repetitive for folks who watch the video, but those very hard side thigh bolsters point your legs straight forward, and that's just fine if you're in a race car and the pedals are straight in front of you, but sometimes you want to stretch your legs out to the side a little bit. You know, the M3 has quite a big footwell. There's a lot of room down there. And so I don't even know about what happens with a clutch if you get these seats with a clutch pedal. But if you try to put your left foot on the dead pedal, the thigh thing bruises your leg because you're pushing out against it so hard. It forces your left foot. Actually, I do know what happens. It forces your left foot to exactly where a clutch pedal would have been.
Yeah, I mean, you can see in this picture there's a ton of room between the brake pedal and the dead pedal, which is where the clutch goes, of course.
Yeah.
And but like you're saying, your left leg is guided
straight
right towards
in
the clutch,
that hole,
which is great.
Yeah.
But if you don't have a clutch, or if you want to move your foot over on a really long drive, then you're just pressing up against the thigh bolster a bit.
Those seats really look cool, but they're very posture-y for the amount of, because we drove the M4, and it's like with the regular seats. They're fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice seat. It's got the little glowy thing in it.
It does.
It's got good support. Like, I don't recall us having any complaints about the regular seats. They don't look cool. They're just regular seats. But like, these were a pain in the ass. Having said that, the M3 as a sedan makes way more sense at this size and power level and all that than it does as a coupe.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, the car has always been the do everything car, right? I mean, that's and it can do more things with four doors. I wish my car was a sedan because I'd actually bring people in it. But picking people up in a coupe, putting the seat forward,
like,
it's just not convenient.
Why don't you buy like a fucking 323 and have Mark just turn one into the other?
Because it would not be a cheap thing to do.
That would be fun.
But one day, if I could, I would. I absolutely would. E46 sedan with M3 swap would be great.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan of everything about it, other than the impracticality of two doors. And the proportions from the side look better with the sedan. I mean, the doors are a little bit weird, but at least it doesn't have this, like, it doesn't look as much like a Mustang at all.
For sure. And at least the door isn't gigantic. The doors on the M4 are gigantic, which some people might not care about, but when you're trying to park it in a regular size spot, you've already made the car super wide, and now you've got a long door. A long door can't open as far of an angle. The shorter the door is, you know, the opening gets smaller, but you can open the door wider to get out of it. So I don't know about you guys, but I don't really like when the door is super long and then you can't open it because you had to park close to the car next to you and then you're stuck. that stinks. So, yeah, I mean, that's a great pic. Zach's got a picture up right now. It really just shows, even with the heinous grill, how much better the proportions work as a sedan. And that's a, that photo is incredibly complimentary to the coupe.
Yeah, this is, I mean, this is BMW's press photos. I'm going to go to, there's a side shot.
But it's, it, the sedan is within a couple inches of all ways of the E39 M5, which is a sedan that is basically perfectly proportioned.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So I saw last night, I was driving downtown for that thing, and I saw an E39 M5 Laguna Seca Blue with the peanut butter interior. It was an 03 with the angel eyes, just the mint.
That is one of the best sedan designs ever.
And it had like like a Dinan exhaust on it or something like that, maybe a Schnitzer or a Dinan exhaust. It had just the nicest, just, you know, that like fucking good.
Sounds that strong, car, but not obnoxious.
That's just the shit. That's going to be one of the, that's, I mean, it already is, but really that's going to be.
Well, didn't one sell for $200,000 like 3,000
miles on it.
Okay.
It was everything. It was black, which is rarer. It was an 03, which is the most valuable year. It had 3,000 miles, which good fucking luck. And it was prepped by EAG.
Yeah.
So it was every value adder. You know, the only way it could have been more valuable was if it was Imola Red. If it was Imola Red, it probably would have been 250. Or possibly if it was Alpine White, which were the rarest colors.
Is that one of the highest prices yet for what, you know, a modern sedan? Like, let's say anything after 1985. I mean, I'm sure there's some Rolls Royces
from
the 60s.
What do we want to call modern sedan? I think there's been Hammers. There's been AMG pre-merger Hammers that have been quite expensive. Where do you want to draw the line? Sedan. I mean, there's been Hammer conversions that were done to sedans, coupes, and wagons. The Hammer wagon was just the best. And I'm literally looking right this second at a Hammer coupe right now,
which is a gorgeous car.
Which is fucking hottest car we've got in that room right now, probably.
Yeah, that is proportioned really, really perfectly, like from end to end.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no bad angle.
Yeah. How about that E30 downstairs?
That thing is, I want the seats.
You know, it has an
so
S54 powertrain in it.
I didn't know that, but I like the exterior color, is dark blue. Whew.
Yeah, it just came in. E30 M3 with a S54 full powertrain.
The seats like aggressive Recaros with diamond-stitched blue thread, but only in part of the bottom of the seat, so it's almost like an accent.
Everything is very matchy-matchy.
Sick. It's sick. And the thread in that is, it's not exactly the color of my car, but it's close.
It's very good.
I'm really in love with the seats.
Yeah, it's a good build, that one.
Yeah. I don't need a savings account. Fuck it.
I liked driving the new M3. I thought it was a nice drive in pretty much all the conditions, you know, and it was nice in the city. Mm-hmm. The normal mode, like the just turn it on and whatever mode, is way better than the last ones. Like the normal mode in the F80 was like super sluggish, and you had to click it to sport like pretty much all the time. This one, the normal mode, is like it gives you a little more regularness. And what I love is that if you stuff like your setting, your suspension, start, stop, and exhaust mode, those three stay whatever you leave them on. Even if you turn the car off and come back, like they stay. So like, I don't like start, stop. I just don't. It saves me very little gas and it's annoying.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to leave it off. I like to leave the comforts, you know, shocks. I like to leave the exhaust baffles open. And so those just stay. So you don't have to do your button dance every time you get in the car. And that's cool.
Right, that's good. Because
that's cool.
For what? Did they always have that? I mean, I know for decades now, BMW has given everyone tons of adjustability. But for a long time, did it always revert back?
It's so funny. No, I'm not saying that. I don't remember.
Okay.
Mercedes always reverted back. Mercedes just always goes back to default. I don't remember if the BMW stayed. They don't stay in M mode, but like I don't remember if the other settings stay.
I like the M buttons too. It's it's really intuitive to just turn on that setting, cancel it with the button, turn on this setting, cancel it with the button, instead of having to go into this menu and hit DSC and all this other stuff. It's like, let's just have a shortcut, which is good.
Pretty much all the Germans have an individual mode. now, whether it's M1, M2 with BMW, Porsche has and Audi have an individual mode, and Mercedes has a separate, all their new, Mercedes' new like LCD buttons are fucking badass, and they have an individual nice. Mode too. Those are really, the scrolly knob that has a screen in it, that's fucking cool.
Very cool.
That's a very cool use of a miniature LCD screen.
And they're little, they just have those two little haptic buttons on the mm-hmm. steering wheel, which look really nice, and you
the
work,
little
work
squares.
For swiping, the squares yeah. for swiping. I never hit one. I never accidentally activated anything with them, which is good because they're inset far enough on the spoke of the wheel that you're not, your hand's not over there for no reason.
The Ferrari
unlike
one
the Ferrari.
Bad.
Unlike the
My
Ferrari.
My review of the SF90 is up on Road and Track, and Zach and I's video is up on the YouTube channel, the 986 horsepower Ferrari SF90. And... Yeah, I mean, I wrote 3,300 words. They cut about 250 of them, which actually was now that I read the final product, I agree with it because they were kind of redundant, and that's okay. That's mm-hmm. why you have editors.
Yeah,
but you know, there's a lot of ground to cover with SF90 because it's a complicated car. Technically speaking, and contextually speaking, you know, what is it? What is the fact that that Ferrari's newest production car, you know, that anybody, I mean, with money, obviously financially limited, but in theory, anybody can walk into a dealer and order and buy mm-hmm. and get eventually a 986 horsepower fucking car. You know, in the past, the 900 horsepower hypercar club.
It's a very exclusive place.
It's a very exclusive place because they made very few cars, and the people that had enough money to buy them were at a place financially where they no longer had anything to prove. And remember the Bugatti, our Bugatti handler, Jamie? Mm-hmm. He was talking to me about how when he worked at Lamborghini and he was doing this job giving test drives in Aventadors and stuff, the type of client that was shopping at that price point versus the type of client that's shopping at a Bugatti price point, let's just say the type of client that's shopping at a $500,000 price point versus a multi-million dollar price point are far more likely to crash the car.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's newer money. They've got more to prove.
More to prove.
They're coming up. They're still coming up.
Yeah.
And they probably don't have the maturity of either someone who's been in whatever game a lot longer and made more money or multiple.
Crazy to say that about a $500,000 to $700,000 car, but this is the world we're in right now, isn't it? And
well, think of how excited you would be if you had finally made enough money to buy something like that expensive.
Right.
And the person buying the Bugatti or whatever, they've already had that experience, but they did it when the cars had 350 horsepower.
Right.
For the most part, yeah, for the
yeah,
exception.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, if you came up 20 years ago and you bought a 360, you know what I mean? It had 390 horsepower and about 12 pound-feet of torque.
Yeah.
It's a lovely car. It's a lovely car, but the odds of like oversteering one out of a Cars and Coffee are pretty fucking nil.
Yeah, especially just going flat in a straight line.
Yeah. You're not going to like...
But these things...
This car is a 9-second car. Not straight up, not even a problem, just 9 seconds. That's what it does. And
you need a cage to run nines at most drag strips.
Yeah,
I believe.
If you just showed up at a drag strip and ran this, you'd probably get kicked out.
Yeah.
It's too fast for some professional motorsport facilities. Which is wild.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, what's it feel like to drive a 986 horsepower car? Well, when you're using all 986 horsepower, which is very rarely, it's fucking bananas. You know what I mean? The thrust is extraordinary, but in the canyons and on most racetracks that aren't gigantic, your cornering speeds are still, you know, limited by your tires, your bravery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this car has some really trick aero, but it doesn't have fucking
it's not. It's not 2,000 pounds of downforce.
Yeah,
aero.
Yeah.
It's not sucking
it's
it.
It's not Glickenhaus.
Yeah.
You know,
a lot of the aero on this car was really about managing efficiency and heat.
Yes.
So, you know, all the
batteries.
It's about cooling things off. It's cooling the radiators, the intercoolers.
Extraction,
all that stuff, and keeping it slippery to achieve a little bit higher MPG and a lower CFD. It wasn't like we're trying to shove this into the ground so you can drive upside down.
Right. So, you know, in the canyons, in the couple of places where you can squirt the throttle to its fullest, it's fucking bananas. But you are going so, I mean, and I'm not saying that that isn't fun if you do it once in a while in the right circumstances, but like, am I actually having a better sensory experience because I get to squeeze 986 horsepower a couple seconds at a time in a couple very select places, or would I really be having more fun in, you know, a fucking 360 with a stick or a 430 with a stick where it's like a lot less power, you know, but I can actually think about what I'm doing. I have a pure mechanical connection to the car. It's just like it hasn't necessarily, with the exception of obvious bursts of exhilaration, translated it into a really a more fun experience.
Right. Well, because I think what it's doing is it's a simpler form of fun. It's straight line speed, you know, and we've talked about this. If your car runs a 12, eventually you want it to run an 11 and a 10 because you're going to get used to it. And your adrenaline, you're going to get a huge dump the first time you know, go full throttle in the SF90. And then the 12th time, you know what to expect. And the 40th time, you will get used to it. The human brain, like, this is why skydiving turned into base jumping, because people kept doing it.
And then squirrel suits through holes.
Exactly. Like, and then they got to shoot the gap. And then you're Jeb Corliss and you're shaving, you know, the skin off your leg, and you're not taking painkillers because you're like, I don't need them. This is amazing. So I think it's such an exciting car to drive. And the sensory experience behind you and the noise is really incredible. But if all you do is pay attention to how fast it accelerates, and then you don't pay attention to how you corner, I think you're actually going to be missing a huge part of the joy that driving can provide. And when a car is that fast, you're almost going to be more restrained around the corners because you think you're going so fast all the time, or you think it's really unwieldy. Instead of, if you had 400 horsepower, you'd probably go, now I'm learning how to corner and brake and, you know, drive a better line and all these other things. So I think, to your point, there's a more complex driving experience you can have that is more enriching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. This is like, you know, this thing's like grain alcohol, whereas you could be having like a Brunello where you're not going to get as drunk, but you're really tasting the terroir of Tuscany.
Remember,
you know,
Buffalo
what I mean?
Trace? We went there and we saw the whole Willy Wonka machine, and they let you taste the clear alcohol before it turns into bourbon.
Yeah.
And your face. And I've watched you drink vodka and everything else, but you just went, whoa. And they wouldn't give you a shot. They gave you
it was like a little tiny. Yeah.
And that, so, you know, you can have that, or you can wait till it becomes bourbon and taste syrup and wood and all these other things.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you always got to have the newest next thing, you know, this is the shit. You know what I mean? It's crazy. And Zach and I actually, I don't know, I don't think anybody else besides Zach and I got to have the unique experience because we didn't just have the M3 press car. We also had the current Acura NSX, which is extremely interesting because almost everything the SF90 does, the NSX did first. The Ferrari just fucking shoves more power at it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's some other tech things that they've done that are brilliant, and I don't want to shortchange Ferrari, but the mid-engine twin turbo low mounted motor with a 3-motor hybrid system, the NSX brought that out in 2016. And so we at the time I went up the canyon and I went, fucking fuck, this car is absolutely off the wall fast. You know, and then it's dull as rocks to drive in the city.
Which car?
The NSX.
Oh, right.
The NSX. Yeah, yeah. It was just crazy fast. So we had it before, and then also a little after, we went up the canyons in the NSX after driving the SF90. So you're talking about a $150,000 car.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, obviously, you know, inferior to the Ferrari. Obviously, the interior and a bunch of other things are downgraded from Ferrari level. But it was interesting to see how I think, honestly, dude, like, I think we were going the same speed. Like, I'm not sure the extra 400 horsepower, like, gets you all that much in terms of real world.
I'm sure I was. Well, I knew the road we drove with the NSX, I know better than the one we took on the SF90. So I was definitely a little more timid than I have been in the last couple of weeks with other cars. But the NSX, it's like, part of it, I think, for me, was that it's quieter. It's a couple hundred pounds heavier than the SF90.
Yeah.
And because you don't have this bare carbon stuff like rattling these rocks around and hearing everything, it doesn't sound like you're going as fast inside, even though you know you're going very quickly. But the steering speed, the front end grip, it's so intuitive, and you go so fast through every corner, and you just feel like it's like, I telepathic is an overused term, but you're just like, there's a corner, I know what to do with it, I know how much to brake, I know how to turn, and the car is going to take care of everything I need to do right now.
Yeah.
And you don't really notice.
Both those cars make you a hero.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, both of them, when you're in the city and you leave it in stupid hybrid mode, in both cars, you're like, this stinks. I mean, it just...
I liked it. I like the quiet in town.
I don't mind pure EV. I just don't like when the engine's coming on and off, on and off, on
yeah,
and off.
Yeah, and the NSX like lights a second slower than most hybrids do these days. Like, it's slower to turn on than a Mercedes with stop-start.
Right. Well, most of the Mercedes use the 48-volt, which the NSX does not use on the stop-start.
Okay.
That's why. The 48-volt kicks the stop-start on really fast. The Ferrari... I was shocked at how, for a small company, relatively speaking, how finely tuned the hybrid system was on the SF90. I thought the blend between electric and gas, the blending of it was really, really good. When the engine did come on and off, like, I didn't like that mode, but I thought, like, wow, like, that's a fucking slick, the clutch integration is, like, really, really slick.
Yeah.
You hear it because it's a fucking Ferrari engine, but you don't feel it.
Right.
And that's nice.
Yes.
It comes on and, like, rises like, it doesn't feel like it's start, like, the NSX is on, it's got, like, start-stop.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can feel it start and then engage.
And the car
starts Ferrari
moving.
Feels like it doesn't have a starter that starts it. It feels like it just goes from zero to in. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't have a starter. It just starts.
It almost it feels like there on. there are two sets of rear wheels. So that when it starts, it just starts propelling a new set of wheels, but the original set is not interrupted.
Right,
whereas the NSX, I'd get to a stoplight and the engine would turn off, and it would run the AC and all that stuff. But then once I let off the brake and I needed to go, it would take a beat, fire, and then start moving.
Right.
And it was like, oh, I'm joining you, hang on for a second, EV motor, and then they have to like figure out who's going to turn which wheel.
I don't like driving in hybrid. I drove the Ferrari around in EV a little bit, and I found it to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the city, it's got 217 horsepower from the EV motors, the front, from the total, from all three. I don't know how it breaks down. I don't know how much of just the front two. I forget. I'm sorry. But in EV, you're just driving the front two. So actually, the SF90 is also the first front-wheel drive Ferrari. It's the first Ferrari that you can drive on the front wheels. And so if you wanted to explore the front wheel drive dynamic of a mid-engine Ferrari, you could do that with SF90, which is kind of interesting. But, you know, I think driving back-to-back with the NSX, you're reminded of the performance value that is the NSX.
Yeah.
Extraordinary Huge. Performance value.
That one starts at 157, which is... what, 30 grand less than a Turbo S?
Yeah, and it's a third of the base price of the SF90.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, which is, super, super impressive. SF90, though, by comparison, points for space. I mean, it's a really roomy, comfortable car. You know, you could easily daily drive it. No problem. If you're balling, fucking would daily. Absolutely would daily. And our handler of that car, who is a very nice guy. Some people were giving me crap in the video comments because unlike the Bugatti Chiron, where the handler wanted to be, was chatty and wanted to be involved in the conversation, this particular handler, we gave him the choice.
We did.
You can be active participant. He wouldn't let us go alone. So he said active participant or a ghost. And he chose ghost. It was not, we didn't say shut up and sit there. He chose ghost. So he was cool and he, you know, beggars can't be choosers. Sometimes you got a babysitter with a fucking super expensive car.
He was super helpful. He was just there. He tried to hide. He's very tall. He tried to hide himself out of frame.
Yeah.
We had to crop in and, you know.
He also said that that he works for the Ferrari track day training program, which is a touring series, and they use 488 pistas, and they use challenge cars, the race cars, and they also have a couple of SF90s that they are bringing into the fleet for the training. And he said that and I mean, obviously this guy works for Ferrari. I'm not verifying his claims, but he said they run these things the track all day. All day. And he said they have to refuel the pistas 3 to 4 times a day, and they refuel these cars half.
Wow.
It goes through half as much fuel on the track. And in my experience, you know, it's got some different modes, right? Qualifying mode is like fucking bonsai mode.
Right.
But they don't run them in qualifying mode. They run them in sport mode. Because it's still 986 fucking horsepower.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't, it's not, you know what
with
I mean?
With a little more traction control, which is fine.
Right. But in sport mode, it makes enough power from the engine, and the engine spins enough revs that you have enough regen that it's actually battery positive. Even if you're flat out dumping electrons on the straights as hard as you go, flat everywhere, it will still regenerate more.
Because it seems like it's set up where the engine is aggressively charging the battery under throttle. And then at the end of the straightaway, which every track, like there's a lot of braking happening on the track. So it's just doing a lot of regen.
It's regenerating under braking. Yeah. It's when it's not regenerating is when you're coasting. So on the racetrack, it's going, you know, it's doing both.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So I had the same experience with a Panamera Turbo S e-hybrid, where after a 6-lap session, the battery had 7 or 8 more miles in it than when I started. And I had the same experience in the SF90, where at the beginning of my section of video, I was like, what, I drive 12 minutes or something. Mm-hmm. It showed like 8 miles of battery. And when I finished, it was 12. So it was battery positive on the end of it. So that's cool.
Yeah.
That's neat.
It's a very neat thing.
But it's neat. But it's just like, you know, we're post fun. You know what I mean? Like,
it's very serious.
It's very serious.
It's very serious. I mean, anything with this power level. I mean, look, in the last couple of weeks, we've driven a 620R, the 911 GT3, other fast things, all of which, like, we drove very quickly in, but I felt like, okay, I understand what these are doing. And how, mm-hmm. This thing, I've never driven a car with 950 horse, 86 horsepower before. Like, it's not fun because it's so serious. The consequences are really serious. The speed is very serious. And
you got to be careful.
Dude, I mean, if you go flat between a corner in a car with 400 horsepower, like, and hold it for half a second too long, you can get in trouble.
Yeah.
I saw someone, I came upon a crash 3 weeks ago in Angeles Crest.
Oh,
yeah. Exactly that.
With not a lot of horsepower, right?
That was 300.
Yeah.
This has 3 times that.
Yeah.
And so if you breathe too long and wait, like, you are going, you're not hitting the guardrail, you're going through it.
You can enter a corner at 50 miles an hour too hot in this car.
Yeah.
Like,
not 5.
No, like 50. If you go flat and miscalculate how much time you have before that corner, and it's got a lot of brakes, you know what I mean? It's got a lot of brakes, but like
tires only have so much traction.
You 40 or 50 miles an hour too much. Easy.
Yeah.
Easy. And you know, there's no training requirements to buy it. You just show up with money. I mean, that's it.
It's a good thing that most of the people that A, can afford this car, and B, will buy it, are in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. Imagine.
Bitcoin.
I just cut a bunch of people's wealth in half. Like
Doge Lord.
Exactly, Doge Lord. I mean, if you were 22,
yeah.
If I was 22 and I had this car magically, I'd be dead.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh yeah. And it's probably a very safe car, but the accidents you're going to have is not going to happen at 50 or 60.
Right.
It's going to happen at 150 or 160.
Yeah. The interior of the capsule will be fine. You're going to need a lot of body panels, though.
Probably. Yeah. And, you know, who the fuck knows what's going to happen with something like this? I got out of warranty. I mean, I've heard two incredibly scary stories about battery packs in LaFerraris.
Really?
Yeah. Like, all of a sudden they stop working. And all of a sudden, you know, maybe your LaFerrari that's now out of warranty, you have a $200,000 bill.
Right, because they made 12 of those battery pack.
Yeah, I mean, really sure how that's going to play out with the more produced car, you know. But
well, it's probably better because this will have higher production numbers.
This is going to be we're now going to be back to where the maintenance is crazy expensive. What's going to be more expensive to maintain, SF90 or a 355 Spider F1?
Ooh, that's a fun game. I'm going to go with the SF because you could buy seven 355s with the money for the SF. But
if I had enough money to buy an SF90, I shit you not, I would have a 355 Challenge, and I would have a complete powertrain on a stand separate that would be serviced.
From a 355 Challenge?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And when the service came, I would just swap. And then they could work on that one and have the new one here and just keep driving it.
A hot swap.
I would hot swap internal combustion engine powertrains.
That's funny.
Yes, that's what I would do if I had enough money for this.
Wow, now you're like an F1 driver in the 70s.
It'd be vastly more interesting to commute in.
Oh,
not an F. Did I say an F1? Not an F1. A stick.
You said F1.
Obviously, I meant a stick. I pine. Lord, take me back to 1997 in the F1 Ferrari transmission.
I would like my shifts to be delayed and brutal, please. I would like to be punched by George Foreman when he was in his 50s.
Delayed and brutal. I would like my shifts late and rough.
Yeah, it's like Butterbean, you know, that boxer. Like, I don't want to get punched by him because he knocked Johnny Knoxville into a wall. Yeah. But the punches come slowly, but with ferociousness.
Late and rough, like Marlon Brando in Streetcar for Desire.
No, I never saw that.
It's too deep.
That's really. Yeah,
it's a wife beating.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not good. Yeah.
All right.
Anyway,
I just got in here. What's going on?
Yeah. Anyway, those are things.
It's a pretty. I don't know. It's a cool car.
Yo, you can. It's 985 horsepower. It's the cheapest 985 horsepower. It's mid-engine supercar that's ever been.
Yeah,
it's a value.
Yeah, yeah.
Technically, it's also a bargain. That's the problem. It's like a bargain, but it's also, you know,
yeah, super expensive.
Yeah,
right. I know. Yeah, if you were hoping,
and ours had $200,000 in options on it. 500K base 507, and the one we drove was 700.
Carbon pack was a lot, right?
Yeah, I have. It's in my. It's on my phone, which is in there. But it's like the Assetto Fiorano pack, which is the track pack, mm-hmm. comes with Multimatic shocks and a bunch of other shit, and it's $57,000. And then there was the carbon pack, that was like, you know, $90,000.
Right.
And then there was some other stuff. And it added up to $200,000 in options. I mean, it was fucking intense.
That's insane.
And at the end of it, the car was white.
Yeah.
at the end of your 200K in options, the car's white. That's crazy, isn't it?
It really, I've never seen one other than one we have. I'd love to see it in any other color with flake.
I saw one.
Somewhere that's not, and not at noon.
I saw one on Sunday in Malibu. And here's the thing. One is our Ferrari PR guy told us that they all have black roofs. They don't. So they're not all a two-tone. The one I saw was, I believe it was Grigio Titanio, which is basically sparkly gray.
Okay.
And it was beautiful. It was a fabulous color, way better than the white. It had a kind of a funky silver nose a stripe that sort of fanned out into a nose piece.
Oh, okay.
Right? And then it was monochrome. It did not have a black roof. Here's the problem, though. Without the black roof, it took me a minute like probably like 15, 20 seconds of staring at it and walking around it to say, is that an F8? To determine if that was an F8 or if it was a SF90 in that color.
Yeah, and that's a problem.
There it is. Yeah, there it is. That's Grigio Titanio. Oh, that's the F8.
This is the F8.
See, yeah.
I just wanted to see.
Here's how you tell. The way to tell is the shape of the taillights. The nose looks almost exactly the same, except for the headlights.
From a profile view, yeah.
They look pretty similar. The shape of the fins inside the scoop is different, the side scoop, and the shape of the taillights are different. But I saw it from the nose, and it's pretty similar, especially in that color. I know people are going to be like, no, it's not the same. But if you didn't park them next to each other, the F8's been out for 1 year. It's not like we all know the shape of it. And it looks, they look pretty similar.
Yeah.
In silver, you know. So anyway, I was like, ooh.
Which the LaFerrari, it looks like a LaFerrari.
Exactly.
It does not look like anything else.
Exactly.
Yeah. Same with, actually, I was going to say 918, but 918, if you only look at the headlights, you're like, it could look like
918s every look way show. Different. But P1s, if you aren't, you know, if you don't really know about McLarens, a P1 looks kind of like a 650 and 675.
Right, and that's the problem. I think the P1 come out first, and a P1 I love the shape of. I love the shape of the back and all of it. Mm. And then they directed all the rest of McLaren's design into that same rounded shape. With the 720, then took a different step.
720 changed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So those are that's what we've been driving. Oh, the Harley. So the Harley Panamerica, right? So Brad Brownell came on the show, talked about the Harley Panamerica, which is the new adventure touring bike from Harley, all new motorcycle. I got one to ride, and then on the very first day, it left me stranded on the side of the road, and I posted on Instagram about it. Now here's the thing: it was not the motorcycle's fault. I can't say this clearly enough because what happens is when you complain about something, you can never follow it up with the truth fast enough, even if you're an honest person. Nope. Like me. So the bike dies on the side of the road. Some very nice people pulled over within 30 seconds on Harleys. Harley people, fucking, I mean, I was on the side of the road. You couldn't tell this was a Harley from driving by at 60. It doesn't look like a Harley. But not only did someone pull up 30 seconds behind me on a Harley who happened to work at the Harley dealership around the corner, Bartels. Shout out to Alex and Danielle from Bartels Harley. They were right there. They pulled over. They looked over the bike. They determined that whatever was wrong with it, it wasn't like clearing a code. It wasn't a software issue. It just turned off. The motorcycle just stopped working, okay? So they fixed it. They were like, all right, we're going to go to the dealership and we're going to get our truck and we're going to get the bike and bring it to the dealership. So they leave. It's like a mile away. I'm on the side of the road for like 15 minutes. And in that 15 minutes, like four other people in Harleys ride by and slow down to ask if I'm okay. Every single person on a Harley stopped or slowed down to ask if I was okay, which I was very impressed with. And that was nice. They get the bike. As it turns out, I found out a couple hours later, these bikes are pre-production.
Mm-hmm.
They were on this press launch that Brad was on, which was a dirt launch. They were all super dirty. So they were disassembled to be like nut and bolt cleaned before going into the press fleets, which is a pretty normal-ish thing to be doing, right? So they were taken apart as much as you would normally take a bike apart and cleaned and put back together. Well, I was the first person to get this bike. Well, whoever put it back together didn't quite screw in the fuel line quite tight enough. And when I hit a big bump on the 90, the thing just popped out. It didn't pop out, but it just popped off its little proper connector.
Mm-hmm.
No fuel.
Right.
Bike dies.
Right.
So, okay. They fixed it. They got it back to me. And this is not the motorcycle's fault. This doesn't mean we have an unreliable motorcycle. It just means that a bike got taken apart and one little thing, it was fixed. It was fine. So don't be mean to Harley. And this does not an indicator of a bike that's bad.
Yeah.
I then went riding. It's fucking nice.
Yeah.
It's really nice. It feels very European. It's a dual overhead, you know, it's an overhead cam engine, you know, with valve timing and stuff like that. It's free revving. It's, you know, it's got a real nice intake snort like your BMW kind of has. Mm-hmm. Like it sounds like individual throttle body kind of thing.
Suspension's good. It has adaptive, right? It has
adaptive and kneeling suspension. So
sorry.
It's adaptive in terms of the damping.
Right.
And when you drop to under 9 miles an hour, it lowers the bike 4 inches so you can stand comfortably on the ground.
That's so
smart. And then you
smart.
Accelerate again and it lifts up again.
That I mean, is very
it's cool as
very
fuck.
Smart.
It's so nice. It leans. It kneels for you.
That's such a genius idea. Like I genuinely like the number of people that have wanted to buy a motorcycle X mm-hmm. but couldn't because they couldn't stand, you know, like they're literally not tall enough
yeah.
to stop at a light. Or they have to like lean over, you have to cut the seat or anything.
Solved.
That's fucking genius.
Yeah, it kneels. So now that's solved and it's got all these different ride modes.
How far does it drop when you do that?
I think it's like 4 inches. It's a significant amount.
Wow.
It drops far enough that when it goes up, I can stretch my legs like straight down and not touch the ground. It's cool.
It's cool.
But it's just, you know, it's fast and it's got great brakes and the ride is excellent and it's smooth and it's not as feature, even with this cool suspension, it's not quite as feature loaded as the Ducati, mm-hmm. but it's cheaper.
I'd expect so. Yeah.
It is a little weird looking in the front.
Definitely not for me. Like I don't think it's a very good looking motorcycle. And adventure bikes, to be fair, usually look a little weird. Like the KTMs yeah. had very like the yeah. you know, upright windscreen, yeah. very flat lights. It's much
those,
more
like,
about function.
Husqvarnas and shit are weird.
Are kind of odd yeah. looking. This just kind of falls suit. But I just think that the Multistrada was. They took like the headlights from their RR division
yeah.
and then just built a screen around it so it looked kind of cool.
But if you took the branding off of this bike and mm-hmm. you told me that this bike was built in Germany or if it was built in Italy or, you know, yeah, I'd believe you. It does not feel like what I would expect from Harley Davidson. It feels like what I would expect from Moto Guzzi or Aprilia or... it's a little tiny tick behind BMW, but like it's fucking it's right there. I mean, it's right there. I've ridden BMW bikes that I liked less than this.
Wow,
not yeah. the GS 1200, but like other BMWs I've ridden that have been not as nice as this. Like it's a very very nice. Nice motorcycle. The only thing about it that's kind of funky, and this. I'll follow up with Harley before we film the actual review of it, but it's water cooled. It's got a big, you can see in this photo, the big radiator, right up front behind the mm-hmm. front tire there. it's got a temperature, you know, a digital temperature gauge on the LCD screen, and it really has quite big swings.
In temperature?
When I'm cruising sixth gear, cool morning air, 65, 70, it's like 185. If I am in traffic, it gets up to like 225, 230, which
wow.
to me seems hot. And that heat, you know, I can feel that in my balls and legs. I mean, to be honest with you, I really can. And I don't know if that's normal. And other bikes just maybe don't do that, but like, or I don't know if there's maybe some air in the system and it's getting a little swingy because it was just taken apart and put back together and maybe it needs to be burped or something. But mm-hmm. like,
that's why they made the lane splitting law in California
because bikes were overheating.
I think it was like in the 70s or possibly during the Olympics in LA, but it was just. At some point, there was a huge problem with motorcycles overheating on the highway because of traffic.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, you can lane split. Like, it's literally what it was for. And so I'm wondering if, it's a good question for the audience, like, if you have a motorcycle, does your motorcycle swing as much in temperature with traffic?
Yeah.
Or is it just because you were in stop and go?
Maybe. I mean, I've had other motorcycles get pretty hot in traffic before, and I even had one actually overheat. I had what the fuck was it? Something Italian from like 10 years ago. But this one, like I was, you know, when I got to the Valley to do the late night playset show, it was like 100 degrees, and I was lane splitting at like 10 miles an hour on the 101 in like terrible traffic, and it got up to 230. It was fucking hot.
Yeah. That's, I mean, that's a really hot.
That's a hot engine.
Hot environment.
Yeah. All right. Looks like we got a lot of questions.
We do,
the
and I pulled up some
a bunch of
the,
like the leftovers too.
Yeah. All right. So I told people we're going to shut down new questions.
Yeah.
And
if we never got to your question, it might have been a bad question.
Well, some were just like Henry Catchpole questions that, you know, weren't for him.
Right.
So we have some of those saved up. I think see. This one's funny because
Andy Fletcher says we have $15,000 for a fun weekend car and track toy. Mustang GT or Silverado. Did you see go to my Twitter?
Just kidding, just thanks for the content.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Did you see the go to my Twitter? The Cobra that just fucking snuck way under the radar. There was a Cobra on Bring a Trailer that just super snuck under the radar. I didn't see it. I wish I did. I would have fucking bought it. It was a 95 Cobra with a 347 dart block and a fucking turbo, but only 46,000 original miles. This looks like my car from high school. That's exactly what my car from high school looked like. And
with it's got a turbocharged dart engine.
Go fucking down. It's a 5.7. It's a 347 stroker dart block. And it looks like a turbo kit. A turbo kit. 5.7 liter big bore Liberator dart long block overboard, forged crank rods, pistons, trick flow heads, ARP hardware, turbo kit, high volume oil pump.
That car must be nuts.
$18,000. This fucking thing just sold for. I mean, that is like the steal of the century.
Well, but it's for a very specific person because it's like it's not a collector car anymore because it's so modified.
But it's it's a Cobra. Cobra.
It's a real Cobra.
And if you're gonna fucking modify a dart engine is like even people who only kind of know cars know that a dart engine is something.
Wow,
stolen.
That is a ton of car
store
for $18,000 fucking dollars. Let's just talk about that's $7,000 less than a new Corolla.
Yeah.
Okay.
I forget what it said, but the dyno sheet was on there and it was a fucking big number. It made real power. If you go into the photos, but that was speaking of $15,000 Mustang GT. I mean here we've got there's the dyno sheet. Here we've got a power. By the way, that says you're not reading that wrong. Max power.
Oh my God.
945 horsepower and max torque 950.
At?
Oh yeah, max.
The wheels?
No, that's going to be engine.
Is it just engine?
That's going to be corrected.
Does
it
matter?
Engine.
Still insane.
Definitely correct.
You know what else makes over 900 horsepower at the crank?
SF90.
The fucking SF90. Holy.
$18,000, bro.
Shit.
Everyone's like, "Bro, get a Busa. You could be right there." Like, "Nah, dude." Fuck.
This has air conditioning.
Dart block turbocharged.
Good
Cobra.
Lord. 18. Oh, wow. All right. Then, yeah, that's a steal. That's a steal.
Right? A 900 horsepower?
I am aghast. I am literally aghast.
How do we miss that? How do we miss it?
$18,000.
Could have bought it for cash. We missed it.
And it looks good. It looks good. It looks clean.
Yeah, it's really clean.
$18,000 for 950 horsepower. What an age to live in.
Yeah.
If you
and
think
looks,
cars
I
are
mean,
boring
it looks
right now.
It's a beautiful car.
I love this wing. I like these low wings on them.
That, I
on
believe
most cars
it,
in
that's
general.
That's the Celine wing.
Celine wing. I like it. Yeah.
And those wheels are not the right wheels. You need the correct wheel that and not chrome. But actually, dude, that looked so much like my car from high school. If I could have had a car that looked just like my car from high school, but 900 horsepower
for
fucking $18,000. Oh, it's a good thing I didn't see that. Oh, I would have been. Oh, look at the ashtray. Guy had mad grits in it. You gotta be having mad grits in it when you're doing 900
fucking
horsepower.
If you build a 900 horsepower Mustang, you smoke cigarettes.
Of course you do. Of course you do.
Jeez, this
looks good.
Wow.
Oh, it's rear mounted turbo? Oh boy.
No, that's a wastegate.
Oh, that's a wastegate. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right.
The turbo is humongous and barely lets the hood close. Let's go to.
I like it. I like it so much. God damn, it's clean under there too.
There
fuck.
You go.
Oh, there it is. Yep. That's
huge
a big
turbo. Huge turbo. It's far bigger than the alternator.
Yeah.
Wow. This is a I don't have any creative words. This is just a beast of a car for for adorable dandelion money. That's what this is. This is the price of a used Civic.
Yeah, yeah.
EX.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
what a
crazy.
Great time to be into cars, man.
I know, it's like, awesome.
Oh, the used right. market, so strong. Okay.
Yeah, what else we got here? What is... Mr. Liam F. 1998, what is the best first air-cooled 911? I mean, that depends on how much money you have. I mean, honestly, like, one that works. One that isn't a piece of shit. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't have... There's, they offer different experiences. I mean, the 993 is kind of by itself, and the rest of them are variants on a similar theme, right? 964's got power steering... You know, but the best first one, I mean, does first mean it should be shitty somehow? Or like
I don't know if he's asking which one in time was the best one or what's the best one. What's the best car for him to own?
I mean, the ones from the 80s are pretty durable. You know, you get them sorted once, you drive them, they'll be fine.
That's what you and Lee both have. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. 80s car, G-body cars, you know, you spend a couple $1,000 to get it gone through the first time, and then you just start driving it, and they're good. So, I mean, I guess that, but your budget, if you have enough to buy a really nice 993 or a really nice 964, there is no reason you shouldn't do that, because they're not, like, less durable or
true.
Less good.
964 looks better than 993, in my opinion.
Yeah, there would be, yeah. You know, everyone's got their own choice, yep. But yeah. Da Big Brembos says, a month ago, I asked about E39 seats hurting my hip, and I moved my seat back as far as possible, and it basically fixed the issue. All right, there you go. Good for you, sir. Brad says, I can't afford a new super wagon, and I don't want an E63. What's the best wagon platform to build on? Recent year Audi Allroad? What could be an option? I mean... A recent Allroad? Can you get the Allroad with the S4 engine? Is that a thing? A new Allroad?
I don't know if it gets the S4 engine, but it has turbo V6, I think. So,
like the original Allroad from like 15 years ago?
No, they make a new like
the current one. Is there a current? Like I don't really know what's going on with Allroads these days.
Okay, 2019 Allroad.
Oh,
248 horsepower.
Is that a 2 liter? That's a 2 liter.
So that's Volkswagen's 2 liter. So you put a tune on it, now you have 350 horsepower.
Yeah, you can. I mean, you can do things with that engine. Mm-hmm. Not like amazing things, but you can get a little love out of it. I don't know about best wagon platform. I mean
you 3 series wagon's good. You know, anything with a turbo, you can turn into a sport wagon.
Yeah, Vinny had that diesel thing that was okay. It wasn't like fast, but it was very, very efficient to be a 3 series wagon. There's not like build what?
I don't think you'll be able to recreate an E63 unless you found a Dodge Magnum.
Right.
And that's going to be like 25, 30 grand.
And not
and,
worth
and
it.
And it's not going to feel like
most
25 grand inside.
Most certainly not worth
right.
it.
So
no.
I think I mean, getting
Volvo
something
Polestars
modern with a turbo.
Maybe? I mean,
those are good.
They're
all
right.
You could tune that up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you can get a CTSV wagon.
I mean, if this person can afford a CTSV wagon, that's the answer. Like, if you're looking at E63s, but you don't like them for some reason, which I don't understand, then yeah, get a CTSV wagon. That's because a recent Allroad with mods is going to cost as much, probably, as a CTSV wagon. No. Aren't those like 55
used,
G's?
Used Audis aren't good.
Yeah. Go CTSV.
Yeah. All right. Eric says, would you upgrade from a 991.2 GT3 to a 992 GT3 for driving thrills? No, I wouldn't. I think the new GT3 is a great car, but if you had the last GT3, the new one, although it is certainly going to set a faster lap time around the track, is definitely not more thrilling. It's an equal amount of thrilling.
Yeah.
Thrilling comes from the powertrain and the engagement, and the powertrain's the same in the new one as it was in the last one. So I would not sell my recent GT3 to get the newest GT3. Yeah. Micah says, thoughts on the new crossover size SUV, i.e. the Mach-E, the ID4, Model Y, new Ioniq, and Area. Had a deposit on ID4, hated the infotainment, and canceled. You know I don't like Tesla as a whole, but something else. I mean, I have a Mach-E. I leased one.
Mm-hmm.
We've had it for, 3 months? And although we had a little software hiccup on day one, I've had no hiccups of any kind since. It's a lovely thing. It's got great space and practicality and comfort. So I really like my Mach-E. I've not driven any of the other vehicles you have listed there. I was in a Model Y for 5 minutes, and it seems fine. I don't have a problem with individual Tesla Model Ys. I have a problem with people that are doing frauds, but that I'm not blaming individual vehicles for that or anyone.
It's not the vehicle's fault.
I mean, you have no idea how often I meet someone who's like, "I drive a Tesla. Don't hate me." I'm like, "I don't hate you or your car. That's not how this works. Like, I don't like the person that's doing the scams. It's not about the fucking car."
Yeah.
So, that would be it. I like my Mach-E a lot, man. I can endorse. We had a review of it, and it was a positive review. And now, as an owner, I think it's a very high quality product.
Very nice. Ride's great. I sat in the back seat the other day. Tons of room.
Yeah,
comfy angle. All that stuff.
It's a good car.
I'm into it.
Yeah, it's a good car. I like it a lot. And the silver. And I'm going to go back to the stupid silver, but I'm going to defend it because an old family friend came to visit me here at the shop a couple days ago, and they were driving a Ford EcoSport.
Mm-hmm.
You ever see that thing?
Nope.
What a fucking miserable car. It is a miserable-looking little car, but it was silver. And it's like a smaller Escape.
Oh, yeah.
It's terrible.
It's their tiny little. Okay.
It's terrible. And it was silver, and he parked it next to the Mach-E. Completely different. The EcoSport Silver is just this cheap, flat. It has technically flake in it, but it's not.
It's an overcast day.
Right.
Totally
and
different.
The Mach-E has real depth in the silver, which is it's a different quality of paint. Let's see. Mr. Liam F. says, if you could have a watch to match one of your cars, what would it be? Well, I try to match my watch with my... All I think about when I leave the house is what watch am I wearing and what car am I driving. I don't think about my outfit. I'm literally wearing compression socks.
He doesn't.
Compression socks and fucking New Balances right now. I have no consideration to anything else. So I always... It's not like match what watch to what car. I always match my watch to my car, sir. Rolexes match Porsches. Audemars Piguet matches Lamborghinis. Seiko for the Mach-E's. And then for Ferrari, something a little gaudier. A little something with gold in it, Something a little fucking aggressive,
Yeah. Especially because your Ferrari's not red.
You gotta turn up the other side piece
there
because it's not a red Ferrari, yes. Nick Albo says, I recently got a 1970 Firebird. The engine is not super healthy and I can wrench. Should I LS it or fix the engine I have now? Zach, you have experience in that area.
70 Firebird. I don't know what block is in it.
Probably a 400.
So look at the aftermarket because it's very possible that you can get heads and intake and that's exempt from smog laws depending on where you live. So you could probably turn that into a decently healthy V8 for less money than swapping it. If you can swap it, just go. Hoonigan just put up a video of a Firebird with an LSA swap drag racing a Pista. Watch that for inspiration and you're probably going to want to get the LS. I mean, the LS is going to be good because it's going to have electronic fuel injection. It's going to start all the time. It's going to run all the time. It's a proven thing. It's small.
You could mate it to a gearbox that's nice.
Exactly. Yeah. You can do all that stuff.
You don't have to mod it. You could really just fucking...
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of work it would take to mod a 1970, let's call it a 400, and a 1970 gearbox to get to the performance level of a drop-in junkyard Camaro V8 and a six-speed...
It's gonna be challenging.
Yeah.
I mean, if 70, you're still in carburetor territory, I believe. Oh, yeah. So to get that, that's never gonna be as efficient.
Bro,
as
you had carbs in that bitch until like 84.
With just more hoses.
The Tahoe was carbed in 1993, in case you're wondering.
If you can afford even just an iron block LS, 5.7 even, or find like a wrecked GTO with a 5.7 and pull the trans also, it's gonna be a completely transformed car.
Yeah. Those top two, I'm going to go with a thank you and moving on. Cameron. Okay. Now, this is interesting because I said I would never talk about this except Carl's dead. So does it matter? Because Cameron says, I recently listened to Opie's Yacht Cast with me and Carl. What happened to Carl's Fox? And what he's referring to is a Volkswagen Fox that Carl bought that was like his shitty dream car.
Okay.
What happened to it was he crashed it drunk into something he shouldn't have crashed into.
Isn't that everything you crash into?
Yeah, but it was something owned by another person.
Okay.
He then had the car. Somebody made it disappear. It's gone. It's gone. It's not coming back. And that's all I need to say about it.
Okay.
All of a sudden, one day it was gone, and it was not coming back.
So he crashed it into a horse.
He crashed. I don't know.
You don't have to say what he did.
I don't honestly remember exactly what it was that he crashed it into, but he definitely had a crash into maybe it was a parked car or something. Might have been a home. I don't remember, but it was on a Billy Joel level. The car was made to be disappeared. Yeah. Did I see teens crash into house? He Googles. Teens crash car through roof of sleeping couple's bedroom. Whoa.
Of second story.
Second story. Of and came in from the came in from the top.
So these teenagers. Amazed.
Is there a video of this security
there's
camera?
There's no video of it. Everyone in the comments was like, what are Ring doorbells for not this? But apparently they were driving fast in a neighborhood, lost control, and then rolled down a hill, catapulted, like they caught, they back handspring Simone Biles style.
Fuck out of here.
And then cartwheeled through the air, and the front of their car came in through the roof and landed at the foot of this couple's bed.
Unbelievable.
This is a car that is sticking straight up in the air out of a house.
Vertically.
Came vertically. Like there's no, they didn't come on the lawn. They didn't hit the lawn. They didn't bounce from that. They came from the air.
Of course, it's in Eureka, Missouri.
Dude,
that was gnarly.
Send it, dude.
Fuck out of here.
Send it.
I just saw, you follow the qualified captain.
Oh, absolutely.
On Instagram, did you see yesterday? The head-on midair jet ski
crash?
Yeah,
that was scary.
Oh, my God.
That was scary.
Head-on midair.
People were saying, they're like, whose fault is this? And they said it's the fault of the jet ski riding behind the boat. Because the guy was trying to jump off the wake coming from behind. And he's like, if you do that, the boat may not know you're there. Mm-hmm. So you should never do that. Either. Wow. So they're so lucky no one's dead.
Yeah.
They're so lucky.
These two jet skis just just disintegrate in the air. It's crazy.
Oh, my God.
let's see. Austin, I'm at the paint decision point in a, parentheses, money bonfire, ground up NA build Miata. I'm struggling to decide between BMW Avis Blue or a yellow. What's Avis Blue?
Avis Blue is a little darker than my car.
Oh.
It's nice. It's very similar to the car downstairs.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, that's nice. Well, that is a BMW. Is that actually Avis Blue?
I don't know what color that actually is. I'm not sure if.
Or yellow. I wouldn't necessarily yellow a Miata. I'm not that into yellow. Yellow only plays on a very select small group of cars.
Yes.
I mean, and also, I don't know if you've ever owned a yellow car, but yellow attracts bugs. Like, we've had yellow press cars, so I've parked in the sun, and I've come back, and I found hundreds of dead bugs on them because they're attracted to the yellow. They land on it, and the hot paint burns them. And then you have dead bugs burned into your paint.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I don't recommend yellow.
Yeah, don't do yellow.
Yeah. Miguel says, I have back pain. What's the best method to find a car seat that works for me? A 2014 Yaris.
Ooh.
All right. So the hard part about back pain is, obviously, luxury cars are made with better seats, right? They have more adjustability. They're sculpted better. In the case of Mercedes, they involve neurosurgeons. I mean, long story short, get a Mercedes. I mean, Mercedes, if you can get a Mercedes that's used but recent, like 2015 or newer, where the seat has not been, you know, a 300-pound guy didn't own it before you, that is going to be – that's the short answer.
Yeah.
Mercedes seats are just the best across the board.
And I guess the question is, are you trying to put a new seat in your Yaris?
Yeah.
If you're trying to do that, trial and error, which is in your position, like you could go to a race shop and try race seats.
Yeah.
Because they'll have them laid out. Or you could go to different dealerships and
– if you're going to get an aftermarket seat for your own car, just start with Recaro.
That's a good,
I mean, they really, they're the best name in the business for a reason.
True.
And there's other companies that do a great job making seats, but like if you really have back pain and that's why, specifically why you're shopping for back pain, just start at Recaro. There's no cheap way out of this problem.
If you're willing to put a seat from a different OEM in there, you could go to a pick and pull. Mm-hmm. And you could just go sit in as many cars as you want there, and they won't kick you out until the sun goes down, as long as you don't start jacking off. Like, you could just, he could just walk around and get in
and try all these
whatever
seats.
And there are some pick and pulls in LA at least that are focused on German cars, so you could go to like a Mercedes BMW pick and pull, and if you like the seat, then you got to figure out how to mount it. But that's one way to do it.
But if he's talking about a Yaris, like you can't modify that Yaris, like economy car seats. Yeah. They're just not going to do it. And a seven-year-old economy, it's just not going to do it.
You're better off swapping the seat.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Mike says, is there end in sight for the crazy used car prices? Upping the new car availability. I mean, with this chip shortage thing, dealer inventory's low, not to mention the year we've had where anyone who's got any money and wasn't traveling has went out and bought a fucking car.
Yeah.
You know, when the people go back to vacationing with their money and eating at restaurants and stuff like that, and the supply of new cars, you know, comes back, because right now getting a new car is actually quite hard.
Yeah.
And so that's what's driving, keeping the prices of used cars very, very high. Chappie says, thoughts on the coffee table style motoring magazine market? Are there too many in the US and the UK, or is there room for more? Well, here's the thing. I mean, When you consolidate upwards, when you take a magazine that was like 12 months, like Road and Track did, and you make it a higher quality, but for half as often, the coffee table book style format, you know, you're going to lose some people, but the people that are into that are going to be really into it and will probably subscribe to multiple. I subscribe to like all three of the main coffee style, like the Road Rat, Road and Track, and Road and Track's new book, and Triple Zero, I subscribe to all three of those. So I think that you'll find that the people who are looking for that and have the resources would be willing to support that type of endeavor.
I like them.
Yeah,
I like
the
format. It's. I think the quality of the art and the book in general has gone up compared to the monthly stuff, because they have to keep up with the Joneses more with the monthly stuff. And with every other month, they're able to focus more on, like, I mean, with Road and Track, they do
stories,
a theme. I know
I'm
a little biased, but like, they're not going, we got to get the scoop on this thing, and we got to be the first ones to print with the new specs of whatever. So it gives them a little bit more freedom.
I'm writing the only new car review in Road and Track the last 3 months.
Oh, wow.
The only new car review is the last 3 months is my 765 LT, my Elva, and my GT3Ps. That's it. The rest of it is stories about other stuff, you know. So
yeah.
And the Road Rat is themed as well, themed issues. But it's stories from history and stories about, you know, passion for cars and shit like that. And really, there's room for the photography to breathe. I mean, you see in the new Road and Track and stuff like that, where there's an almost extremely abstract photo where you know, maybe you can't tell what it is, or maybe it's like just, it's not what you'd see in even, that would even make it into a regular car magazine, but they've given it a double page spread here. It's like, whoa, you let this photo breathe. Like, wow, like that's amazing. Like, you know, I'm not saying it's a bad photo, but like it's real artsy, that it's not what you'd get out of a mainstream magazine. And, and that's cool. And people that are into that, I think, not like you need to be rich to be artsy, but the people that are really into that kind of thing, I think would support subscribing to more than one magazine. Yeah. Mitchell Nelson says, you have $30,000. Do you buy one fun car and a daily, or buy a more expensive car that can do both well? And which would you choose? Depends where you live. It depends what your needs are. You know, here in LA, it's a real two-car town.
Yeah.
Here, you know, you want to have something to sit in traffic in that can also be like a utility vehicle, and then you want to have a Canyon car.
Yeah.
They're probably not the same car, if that's possible. But there's other places where you don't have to sit in so much traffic and the roads aren't as bumpy, where a sports sedan that does everything or a sport wagon that can do everything makes a lot more sense.
If you're not a camping, hunting person, then I think when I got my car, I remember the forums were saying, like, what's your daily? And I was like, what would you do? Why would you not daily the M3? And now I get it, because it beats it up a little bit more. And it can do a lot, but it can't do everything.
Yeah.
And you can experience more of the world if you can go off-road or on dirt or whatever.
Yep. Mr. Liam, have I seen Sam from Seen Through Glasses 360? If he bought a 360, I haven't, but congratulations, Sam. I like Sam. He's a nice boy. RJK Photographs. Do we believe in wagons over everything? If so, which is our favorite? No, I don't believe in wagons over everything. I like a wagon. I prefer wagons over sedans.
Yep. Yeah.
E63 wagon.
I mean, that can do almost everything. Now that have the selectable all-wheel drive and drift mode, that's pretty much all I could ever want from a tarmac car. If I wanted something that could do just about everything other than go in the dirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A Taycan Cross Turismo for me. That's the shit.
Yeah, that one's pretty cool.
I'm a big fan of that. If you want to tell my favorite wagon.
Yeah, that's a very good wagon.
Pretty G.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Is that Tony? You deleted, yes, Ethan, yeah. Damn, Tony, what up? Thinking about the new digital hybrid sports car experience. 2021 NSX, 2021 Taycan 4 Cross Turismo, Audi e-tron GT. Which should I buy? Tony, I know you. You ain't getting in that NSX, buddy. Tony's a big boy like me. He would not be happy. He's got an old NSX.
Okay.
And it's fire. It's downstairs. It's extremely fire.
Gotcha.
And he can fit in that. The new one's smaller.
It is.
He's not going to get in the new one. Not in a way he likes. Taycan Cross Turismo, I think, is where you want to be at, Tony.
The inside of the one we had, granted, was specced with like a little bit of gold, but it felt worth every dollar that it costs.
Yeah.
Like, it felt so nice inside, very, very upmarket.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a really nice, really nice interior. And it felt special too. It felt unique.
We haven't done e-tron
NSX
yet.
NSX does not feel special inside whatsoever.
No.
That's a big problem I have with that car. We haven't driven the e-tron. Harris gave it really glowing reviews.
Yeah, we're going to have a go eventually, but we haven't yet. But I can endorse Taycan 4 Cross Turismo. That's very good. See you soon, buddy. Andrew says, at what point does a used four-cylinder Cayman Boxster experience make sense? I mean, honestly, dude, a used S, Boxster or Cayman S, is a really nice performance car.
Well, he's saying H4, right? So I think he's talking about the 718 engine.
Yeah, the flat four. Okay. The four-cylinder. Yeah, okay. The S, though, you get the 2.5-liter and variable turbo geometry.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big difference over the base car. And, like, yeah, it sounds like a four-cylinder, but you're still talking about, like, a 350-horsepower car with a big flat torque curve.
Yeah.
Mobs.
The GTS we had for Proving Grounds
was so fast.
Fucking ass.
Yeah,
it set a huge lap time.
I mean, at what price point does it make sense? I mean, more than you think. 50,000?
Oh my God, that's a huge bargain.
Yeah, $50,000, $60,000, you're getting a ton of car for the money.
Yeah.
I mean, more than you think.
You're chasing down expensive shit on the track with that car,
It's literally just the sound.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't even sound like, I don't think it sounds bad. It just doesn't sound that Porsche-like.
It doesn't sound Porsche-like, but the problem I have with it is it also doesn't sound Subaru-like. It sounds like this middle ground of like kind of old Volkswagen, kind of Subaru, and just a little bit meh. But I'm sure the aftermarket has helped that.
Yeah. Paul, Jesus, I'm giving medical advice today. Paul has a S2000, daily driver and track car. He's got low back problems, and driving the S2000 every day makes it worse. No fucking shit. Should I make it a track car and get an ISF Lexus as a daily, or get a GT350 as a dual-purpose car? All right, here's a problem. If those are your two options, if it's binary, neither of those is a great choice. Because I've spent a lot of time in GT350, and the seat is only okay if you've got lower back problems. It's not great. It's only okay.
Mm-hmm. Because the head still tilts forward a good bit,
head
right?
still tilts forward, and there's not a lot of there's no lumbar in that one. And the problem with an ISF is your newest ISF is 8 years old. So whether that seat is good for your lower back is a fucking big-ass question mark.
Right.
There's no generalizations. You cannot – there's no such thing as a generalization about an 8-year-old car seat. It doesn't exist. So if you have lower back problems, you should find a way to have a daily – keep your track car, right? You know, get a good seat, track seat. It'll be good for you. And get a daily driver that's new, a new car – where you're the first person ass in that seat, and it'll I would start there.
Also, try to find out why you have lower back pain.
That too,
like that.
Fixing the lower back
before you get a
pain.
New car, spend the $50 for a copay and go get go to a doctor and get an MRI because that's a way bigger problem.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah,
two people with real back problems in this room.
Yeah,
and yes, if you can solve the back problem, might not be because of the car. It might be because your back is fucked up.
Yeah,
that's that. I would work on that if you can.
These last three.
All right, last three question. Curtis says, "I like weird cars since my daily is an Acura CL Type S.
I just drove one of those.
That's not that weird. That's a pretty normal car. It's a nice car from
it's
back
very
in the day."
Nice. It's the Pleasantville of cars.
What would be a good non-Skyline JDM weekend car? I mean, there's a lot of options. Zach, let's just pull up importavehicle.com let's get some inspiration for what Sean has over in inventory right now. Because we'll see. A good non-Skyline JDM import. Celica GT4, 27 grand on the right. Very nice. Multiple Integra Type Rs. You've got a 1995 Mitsubishi Evo 3. That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
Those are...
they're neat.
And they're legal now.
Yeah, yeah. Evo 3s
are cool. And they have active yaw control back then.
Yeah.
Even back then.
Keep going down. What else? MR2 right-hand drive. That's got the better engine. The JDM engine is better. There's a Silvia. Is that a Silvia or a Prelude? That's Integra Type R. Wow, it's just a weird color.
Integra Type R with a carbon hood.
Yeah. I would say like... You know, you've really got right-hand drive versions of the stuff we got here, you know, slightly different, Supras and RX-7s and stuff with different engines that we didn't have here. But I would say
Pulsar.
Pulsar GTIR.
God, we love
Thank
that
you.
Car. We need to drive one of those. Does someone out there have
Sean's got
a
multiple.
Pulsar?
Yeah,
drive it.
Pulsar GTIR or Celica G, like homologation rally cars is basically where if you don't want a Skyline, get one of the JDM homologation rally cars.
Yeah.
That's where I would be looking.
And I would go Pulsar instead of Evo because yes, we didn't get the Evo here until the 2000s, but you kind of, if you've driven one, you know what the 3, 4, 5 is going to be like.
And the older the Evo gets, the buzzier they get.
Oh, and they're buzzy.
They're really
anyway.
Buzzy. The old ones, like the Gallant VR4s, like the pre-Evos, are the buzziest cars you'll ever drive.
Fast. No wonder they won Rally. Them and Subaru,
fast.
Dude, in Japan, they had 270 horsepower in like the early 90s with all-wheel drive.
Also, pretty soon you're going to be able to get two-door Subaru STIs imported. 97, 98, you're going to be able to get Subaru STIs, two-door GCs imported.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And it's the JDM engine, which is a two-liter.
Yeah.
It's a better engine. Deck, it's a better engine.
Yeah. Oof.
So good. Be on the lookout for that. Hi, Kyle. He just wanted to give us a shout-out. Thanks, buddy. Someone driving a Tesla just referenced you last night at that speakeasy because they did a cross-country run in their Tesla, and they were inspired by our friend Kyle.
Kyle Connor.
Thank you. Come back and see us soon. Garrett has a Focus RS, took it to Sebring for the first time, and feeling a little done with it. Ah, you took a car with the roughest suspension ever to the roughest fucking racetrack in America.
Wow.
Brutal. Looking at Caymans, Supras, and non-R GT350s, what do you like most in the mid-50K range, mostly road trip?
Oh.
Cayman S. I mean, it just does everything well. It just does everything well. The Supra is too compromised. It's not exciting. It just isn't.
It feels small, too, for a road trip car.
It feels very small inside.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the trunk is small.
Yeah.
Caymans have front and rear trunks. They ride really well, and they return great performance.
And you're in Florida, where the roads are
good. Yeah, and GT350s are cool.
I like those.
They're fun. Get the mag ride, though, the track pack one, not the base one. There's a base one that has, like, sucky shocks.
Oh.
And then there's a track pack that got mag ride, and then there's the R that has the crazy shocks.
How's the Voodoo engine doing in the longer-term ownership thing?
Don't know.
I would Google that.
Couldn't tell you.
Because I remember hearing that they had to use a lot of different parts to balance the engine. And, you know, the Cayman, we know, it's a flat six. They know how to make those.
Yeah.
So look into that before you jump on the used train for the Voodoo.
Also, mid-50s gets you a lot in Corvette land. Gets you a lot in Corvette land.
Yeah.
You're deep into a really nice C7, probably a Grand Sport,
yeah,
or a C6 Z06, which is a whole bunch of practical, usable, road trippable.
The Grand Sport
sports car
will destroy the track, whatever track you take it to, and it doesn't have the
heat. It's got beautiful balance.
Doesn't have the overheating issues like the Z06 does.
Grand Sport is like really the right amount of chassis and engine and tire. Very, very good. After I went to drive the C7 ZR1 at Road Atlanta, and after my outlapse, I just fucking white knuckle, terrifying, super fast laps in this monster ZR1, and I was like, hey, can I have a go in that Grand Sport? And they're like, yeah. The Grand Sport, it was like a fucking Miata afterwards. I was just hocking it in, sliding it around the hairpins. It was like the most controllable, flickable, easiest thing ever after that death missile.
Yeah. Yeah. Fast Corvettes, they feel like fast Miatas, you know? And they feel so good when they're balanced like that.
They do such a nice job.
They're really good cars.
Yeah. 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 Well, that's our show, folks. Having now drank the whiskey, I'm going to go exercise.
That's like the way you do
it. The Bert Kreischer Fitness School.
Yeah, it's the boxing camp of the 1920s.
What's on the schedule this week? Do we have a thing? My parents are coming to town.
Your parents coming to town? We don't have any new
Should we finally do the podcast with my father?
Yeah.
Been putting that
he'll
one
do
off.
It for sure. People have been asking for it for a long time.
The business advice podcast?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
If you want to,
you're going to have to ratchet up the donations. His rate is way higher than mine.
none of us, including us, can afford his rate for his consulting fee.
I'll ask him if he wants to do it.
That'd be
if
cool.
he wants to do it, we'll do it. If he thinks it's weird or awkward, then maybe not. But we'll see.
Okay. Cool.
Maybe he'll get frustrated with the business questions the same way I get frustrated with car advice questions.
It depends on how often he gets asked them.
Too often, I'm sure. I don't know. I think we have do we have another show this week? I think we do.
I didn't think we do.
I don't know.
I'll look at the thing.
I don't know. We'll tell you later.
Okay.
Well,
the show with Parker Kligerman airs tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Go listen to the show with Tony Angelo if you haven't.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, I think that's it.
That's it. The SF90 video is up on the YouTube channel, and the review is up on roadandtrack.com. And then we've got the M3 next week. And that's it. That's our show. We're going home. I'll see you later. Bye.